Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guests are Anne-Marie Bernardini and Lisa Wasileski from UPMC Hammett. Ladies, thanks so much for joining us. Let's jump right into it. Anne-Marie, what is your area of expertise at UPMC Hammett?
Well, I've been a nurse here at UPMC for going on 29 plus years. I am the clinician for the mother-baby unit here at McGee Woman's of UPMC Hammett, and I work with the moms after they deliver and the newborns.
What is SIDS, otherwise known as sudden infant death syndrome?
Sure. Sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS, is the death of an infant that is sudden from the time that they're born until they're approximately a year old. SIDS is associated with a sleep period that is unpredictable. It's often referred to as a diagnosis of exclusion and can be determined by just ruling out other signs of or reasons for the death.
Lisa, what is sudden unexpected infant death?
Yes, so the one term that we're looking at more than just SIDS is the SUID, which is a sudden unexpected infant death. And that's going to encompass more than just SIDS. Like Anne-Marie said, that SIDS is more of a diagnosis of exclusion. SUIDs can also include like asphyxiation, suffocation, entrapment. So you really can't determine that something is a SIDS until you've ruled out those things. And half of the SUIDs that we do see end up being SIDS.
Anne-Marie, what advice should healthcare providers give to parents and caregivers about ways to reduce the risk of SIDS and other sleep-related causes of infant death?
Well, there's several different things we discuss when the parents are here at the hospital prior to taking their baby home. And the most important thing is to make sure that the baby goes to sleep on their back. They need to be placed on a firm surface in their own sleeping space and make sure that there's nothing around the sleep area where the infant is.
Are there a lot of misconceptions about how to get a baby to sleep?
There's a lot of misconceptions out there. A lot of family still believe in babies can sleep on their tummy, that they could have a warm, fuzzy blanket around them when they're laying down. And some cribs still have the bumper pads on their cribs. So we encourage parents to make sure that they look at that sleep environment and take any of those excess things away that we do not demonstrate here at the hospital prior to sending them home. So we do demonstrate the practice while they're here, so then they can carry that out when they're discharged.
Lisa, what sleep position is safest for term babies?
The best sleep position is on their back, and it should be on their back all the time. And that means even for little naps, with other caregivers, not just, so it should be every single time they should be placed on their back.
Should preterm infants be placed on their backs for sleep?
Absolutely. One thing for a baby that's preterm, and that is considered born before 37 weeks, just being preterm makes them more at risk of SIDS. And so those babies definitely need to be put on their backs, and we need to be modeling that before they go home. Now, in some cases, we do have babies that have an active respiratory disease, so we will be placing those patients on their stomach to sleep during that time. But those patients, and what that does is actually helps their oxygenation and their breathing easier. But they are also monitored, you know, at all times during that. But as soon as they're well enough, we need to put those babies on their back and then make sure that we're modeling that to the families, besides just teaching it, that we're showing them that safe sleep environment.
Anne-Marie, is the side position as effective as the back sleep position in reducing the risk of SIDS?
It's not considered to be very safe alternative to the position of sleeping on their back. Studies have shown that the side sleep position is unstable and increases the chance that infant can roll onto their stomach, thus causing suffocation.
Lisa, can infants be placed on their stomachs for naps or short periods of rest?
No, they should not ever be placed even for a nap or just that short little rest period you think that they're getting. They should always be placed on their back. And actually that baby that is used to sleeping on their back, if they are placed on their stomach, they're actually 7 to 8 times more likely to die of SIDS.
Anne-Marie, will babies aspirate if they regurgitate while sleeping on their backs?
That's a very good question, because a lot of people feel that if a baby was sleeping on their back, the risk of baby throwing up and then ingesting that into or having that go into their lungs is a higher chance, which is a very misconception. In fact, the esophagus lies behind the trachea, which is the windpipe. So if they were actually to throw up, the epiglottis at the back of the throat would close that off, so they would not aspirate that.
What is the best sleep surface for reducing the risk of SIDS and other sleep-related causes of infant death?
The best sleep surface is a firm sleep surface and a firm mattress in a safety-approved crib, a bassinet, or a portable play area, and that should be covered with a fitted sheet.
Does bed sharing reduce the risk of SIDS?
The current evidence does not support bed sharing at all. In fact, that's when you get into the risk of the SIDS. And that can be just the fact that moms can be so relaxed once they get into that deep REM sleep that they could roll over onto that baby. And it may not just be the mom. It could be the grandparent. It could be the support person that's taking care of the child and not realize that even just sitting in a chair, you know, you want to make sure that that baby doesn't get stuck in between the arm or even the neck of the person holding that baby. So we do not suggest doing bed sharing.
Lisa, can twins and multiples be placed in the same crib or bassinet to sleep?
And actually the answer to that, because you'd think that they'd be okay, that they were in the mom's womb during that time together and it would be comforting, but it actually is not recommended. They definitely need to have their own sleep areas. They have a potential to overheat being next to each other or else rebreathing in their own carbon dioxide. And they also at a higher risk of accidental suffocation.
Can you review some of the things to advise to new parents?
So during some of the education that we do while the parents are in the hospital, we kind of do an intake of what their home life is like. Do they have the support of other family members in case they need to have a break for a nap? Can someone come in and take care of other things that you may need to do? We discuss positioning of their bassinet and crib and show them the proper way of laying the baby down. We talk a lot about a postpartum depression as well, because we know that moms are at a higher risk once they go home, just because life can take over. What is their way of coping with anxiety in their life prior to having a baby, and suggestions of what could help once they get home? Making sure that they get plenty of rest, making sure that they're eating properly. And if they're taking any pain medication, we discuss the risks of the medications that they're on that might hinder them being able to care for themselves or their family. So we do a lot of education with them prior to going home.
Lisa, should crib bumpers be used in the baby's sleep area?
So evidence doesn't support using crib bumpers. And many people think that's what's going to keep their baby safer, but actually it's going to cause more harm. Because you increase that risk of suffocation or strangulation with that. And you don't want to use any type of crib bumper or any similar product to that. And some people, and you got to think about it, outweighs that strangulation or suffocation versus just a minor little bump or bruise. And I know myself as a parent, it was hard initially teaching families not to use the crib bumpers, and they still sell the bumpers, you know, at the stores. And I just thought, I don't want them bumping their head or getting hurt. But someone said to me, would you rather have your baby have a bruise on their head or that they're breathing? And that was enough for me to say, Absolutely. So definitely they're not recommended, and they're actually going to cause more harm by having them.
Anne Marie, is it safe to put other items in the crib, such as blankets or stuffed toys?
I think at one point we probably all in the olden days were guilty of this, and no, it is not a safe sleep practice. Loose bedding and other items in the crib could end up covering the baby's face, which would then cause a change in the oxygen rebreathing of the air around them, plus the suffocation risk. So we do not recommend blankets, toys, even the pacifiers with the little strings attached to them so that we don't lose the pacifier. It's not recommended.
Lisa, can you explain what swaddling is, and can it reduce the risk of SIDS?
Well, swaddling is when, and you'll see the baby's nicely wrapped. I've had some of our parents call it the burrito wrap, because we just wrap them up nice and tight. We get those arms in and legs in and just, you know, bring the blankets over so that they can't hopefully get loose. But as for swaddling, they actually, it's kind of inconclusive because it does comfort the baby and help them with sleeping. And you're always concerned about staying warm. But the other concern is that they can get out of just a swaddling. If they're not swaddled correctly, they could end up with the blanket up over their face and covering their airway. And then you end up with a loose blanket on them. There could also be strangulation if it, you know, becomes loosened. So actually what's more recommended is like sleep clothing or a sleep sack.
And also just to add to that, I wanted to about the sleep sack. It is one of the highly recommended use for a baby to go to sleep in. And our Hammett Health Foundation has just recently donated money toward us purchasing over 800 sleep sacks to give out to the new moms and dads once they're discharged from the hospital. So that's very nice.
Does prenatal care play a role in reducing the risk of SIDS?
It does lower the risk of SIDS because you actually have a nice snapshot of mom's whole pregnancy. The risk of SIDS is particularly increased when parents or when women seek prenatal care later in their pregnancy, like their third trimester, or not at all. Women would seek this prenatal care early in their pregnancy can continue to have regular prenatal care during their entire pregnancy and have any risk for like smoking, which is not recommended because that does increase the risk of SIDS as well. Substance abuse, which we'll get into here in a little bit.
Lisa, how does smoking during pregnancy and secondhand smoke in the pregnant woman's and infant's environment affect the risk of SIDS?
Well, first of all, infants that are born to mothers that smoke during or after their pregnancy are at a greater risk of SIDS, or actually twice as likely to die of SIDS. It also, the smoking can affect the development of their brain while the mom is pregnant in their fetal nervous system, and that affects their sleep cycle, their heart rate, their breathing. So that alone there is what they're thinking is what makes them at a higher risk of SIDS.
Is smoking during pregnancy still a big issue?
In the doctor's offices and at these prenatal visits, and that's why it's like so important for these moms to go to their prenatal visits and help to reduce the risk of SIDS, that they do talk about stop smoking during the pregnancy. And it does affect the babies in multiple ways. We might see a baby that's small for gestational age, or they have intrauterine growth restriction, so they're born very tiny for how far along they are. They end up usually then in the NICU. But there is that education for these moms and with those prenatal visits and talking about it. I mean, if you ask my personal opinion, I don't think people make as big a deal as they used to. But it feels as though it's been accepted, but more. But it does affect them. It affects them, their baby's growth, their development, what can happen afterwards, and it affects them during labor. So it really, they need to stop smoking, and they really need to stop smoking afterwards also because of secondhand smoke and the baby breathing that in.
Does maternal substance abuse, smoking, alcohol, and illicit drugs during pregnancy or after the delivery affect the SIDS risk?
It does. It does show a major risk factor with these infants born to moms who have either smoked marijuana, been prescribed narcotics, used illicit drugs, or alcohol during their pregnancy, particularly with the alcohol, binge drinking. Even stopping during the pregnancy, maybe late toward the latter part of maybe her third trimester, babies are still at a higher risk of having issues with or risk factors for SIDS, even if they did stop.
Are there other complications that could stem from substance abuse?
Yes, NAS is a very, which is neonatal abstinence scoring. So these babies can actually show signs of withdrawal once the mom has delivered the baby, because that substance is now completely cut off to that infant, and that baby is still wanting to have or needing to have that in their system to survive. So those babies are very closely monitored. We keep them in the hospital a minimum of 5 days, and we monitor them as far as their neurologic status, their physiologic status, and how they're reacting to the withdrawal.
Are there trends that these complications are on the decline?
I don't believe there's a decline. I think there is actually an increase.
There's been an increase.
We have been seeing many babies born to mothers addicted to some form of substance, whether it be nicotine. They even go through withdrawal. Mm-hmm. Those babies get real jittery. And it can. We may not see it the first couple days of life, but by day 3, day 4, day 5, these babies are starting to show grave signs of withdrawal.
Lisa, does breastfeeding reduce the risk of SIDS?
Yes, it does. So they've shown that it does lower the risk of SIDS. And one thing that they find is that the breastfed baby is more easily aroused baby than a baby that's formula fed. So they think, you know, that is what helps them, because they can arouse so much more easily that helps prevent SIDS. And there's also other health benefits. From breastfeeding,
antibodies.
You have a decreased incidence of diarrhea, upper or lower respiratory infections in general, which that would predispose a baby to SIDS also.
Do pacifiers reduce the risk of SIDS?
So there's a lot of controversy with pacifiers. When we have a baby in the hospital and the parents ask to use a pacifier, we kind of have certain criteria that we go through. A, if the mom is breastfeeding, we don't recommend using pacifiers until breastfeeding is established, because we don't want that to hinder her milk production. B, we want to make sure that the baby has adequate nutrition. So even if they're bottle feeding, we may not say give them a pacifier, because we don't want to use that in place of a feeding. However, sucking is probably going to be one of their better things to help them prevent SIDS, because it keeps that airway open. So depending on the situation, pacifiers can be used. We do also talk about not using the little strings attached to them. Sometimes you'll buy the little piece that attaches to the pacifier that has a clip to clip to them so they don't lose the pacifier, but that is a strangulation risk. So we ask that they don't use those. Or even the ones with the little stuffed animal on the end of them. Mm-hmm. What are those called, Lisa?
I don't know, but we recently had a mother bring one in and had to explain that that just was not safe, as that binky would fall out of their mouth.
That little stuffed animal
can occlude their airway in some way. And one thing I wanted to point out too is that you don't ever want to force the use of the binky when you do, or the pacifier once you use that. And if it does fall out, just let it fall out. You don't have to worry about putting that back in.
If blankets and other items should not be used in the sleep area, how can parents and caregivers keep their baby warm during sleep?
Yeah, and that's often a concern here where we live in Erie during our winters. It can be long and cold. One thing you want to keep your baby warm, but not too warm. So the goal is, and we usually tell parents, is whatever an adult, room temperature adult, is comfortable at is what you should keep it at. Your baby will be comfortable too. And you can purchase like a wearable blanket, sleep clothing, the sleep sacks that we recommend those. We use them on all our infants in the NICU. And then we are also sending them home with their ones that were donated to us. And on that, I also want to touch on hats. So that's a real big thing. You'll see parents putting hats on the babies to stay, and they think they need to stay warm with that hat on. And actually, that can increase the risk of SIDS by seven times. You increase the risk of SIDS. So you can have them either overheat, but they're not just safe for them. Besides overheating, especially if a baby's getting cold or sick, they can't, tell that they're actually getting sick, and that puts a baby at higher risk of SIDS also.
Anne-Marie, at what age can parents and caregivers stop placing infants on their back to sleep to reduce the risk of SIDS?
SIDS is defined as an unexplained death for an infant younger than 1 year of age. Parents should always, and whether it's parents or caregivers, they should always place their babies on their back until their first birthday, which is what we teach them. Statistics indicate that in the first 6 months after birth, when an infant is forming their sleep habits, they're probably used to sleeping in that position, and they'll just typically do that on their own. So if you get them in that habit from the start, then they'll learn that they'll just find that more comfortable for them.
And I just want to add that when babies do start rolling over, you don't have to place a baby back onto their back. They tend to, like you said, they know that back position. Mm-hmm. And so they tend to end up rolling back to their back. And they know how to get themselves out of that compromised position as if they were on their stomach. They know how to get out of that if they were to have any disruption in their breathing pattern.
Does back sleeping cause other positional issues?
It does put an effect into it because we are telling these families, put them on their back, put them on their back. But one thing that is extremely important is tummy time. So the positional plagiocephaly is that misshapen or flattened head. It's flattened on one side or misshapen. The brachycephaly is going to be that flattened head. And I'm sure you've seen them. Babies that have that very flattened head, or they seem a little misshapen. You probably have seen the little helmets on some babies, and that's helping them get their shape back. So the one thing to help prevent that is tummy time, and tummy time should always be supervised. So we tell our parents right from the beginning when they're taking their baby home, make sure you're doing tummy time throughout the day. It should be supervised and when the baby's awake. And then also just holding and cuddling your baby, holding them up onto your shoulder. They're not having that pressure on the back of their head or the side of their head. Another thing that you can do also when you take the baby home is we've said we're going to do room sharing. We want you to share that room with the baby. That is the safest thing for them and actually helps lower the risk of SIDS. Is that move that crib around in the room to different positions so the baby's looking out in different directions as they're checking out their room. Put the head to where the feet were to switch that up too. So where their feet were, put their head, and then maybe a week later, put their head at the other end of the crib to help prevent that positional flattening of the head.
How diligent do parents need to be about tummy time?
Well, we encourage them to start as soon as they can. The more often that they're put on their tummy, the more comfortable they get with it. So say you do it, you're home the first week and you can only get, two times out of that position. The more they're put on their belly, it gives them the ability to start learning to hold their head up, to be able to start to do those developmental things when they're ready, like crawling, because they're getting used, and they're also strengthening those neck muscles to be able to hold their head up, which then would help them prevent SIDS just because they're able to reposition their head.
If someone or parents had a question, how could someone reach out for more information?
When we're discharging these parents, we give them our hospital floor number where they can contact us at any given time if they have a question regarding anything that they were taught or anything that they had a question about the care. But they can also reach out to their baby's pediatrician and have those conversations in the office with them as well. We also wanted to talk a little bit about what the hospital is doing during the month of October. So October is National
Safe Sleep Awareness Month. So we're planning some different celebrations on our unit and different ways to educate our staff. Mm-hmm. And also celebrate with our families and making sure that our staff is feeling very comfortable talking to our families about safe sleep and how they can reduce the risk of SIDS. And we feel like if the staff is more comfortable with it, teaching it, we're really going to drive that home. And we're modeling it, we're talking about it constantly. And so we do have education that we required education for healthcare providers on safe sleep and reducing the risk of SIDS. And during that month, Anne's going to add in some different plans that we've had for the month to celebrate.
So each week there's a different theme. So one of them will be a safe sleep environment and what it looks like so that we can model it like we do with our patients. Another week we're going to do bring in our lactation consultants and have them talk about why breastfeeding is a key to help reduce SIDS. And then we also partnered with one of the Erie Apparel in Erie, and we purchased shirts that we're going to wear throughout the month of October for the staff to wear and kind of drive that message home. And we also purchased some onesies for the babies to wear. Mm-hmm. So it'll be cute.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again next week as Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor at Penn State Barron, is in the Business Spotlight.